I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi guys, I'm Fiona and I'm from London. You're listening to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything. My question is, if we could choose an alternative colour for the sky, what do you think would work best? Okay guys, here comes the show. And remember, question everything.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything, a podcast for myself, comedian, writer, and occasional actor Dane Baptiste, my producer friend Howard Cohen, aka The Hizza.
Hello.
And a mix of very special guests pose the questions that need to be asked. And we're talking everything from...
Well, we're talking everything from Fiona from London's question, what would be a good alternative colour for the sky? Dane?
It's an interesting question. I think
I can tell you something. It's not, which is, you know, dark black, grey misery. Like if every day was like it is fucking most days in this country, that wouldn't be my choice.
I know, but there's probably some planets that's the weather all the time. Well, that's good weather to them. I don't know. I'd say I don't know, man. I think blue's a pretty good colour because it doesn't occur that much in nature anyway.
I spent a bit of time thinking about it because obviously we get these. Yeah. I think green could work because I think green.
I was thinking green.
Green gives you quite a lot of layers. So we've gone for green, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, I'd say we've both got a green.
Fiona.
I might go for like some kind of teal, to go with bearing from Howard. But yeah, we're keeping it on that side. Aquamarine.
Fiona, suffice to say, on this podcast, we ask and answer all the questions, don't we, Dane?
Absolutely, Howard, because no question is too big, too small, too smart, or too dumb. And if you do enjoy the show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts or follow us on Spotify, and you'll never miss an episode. Or subscribe to us on Acast, the world's largest podcast network, where you can hear all of the very special questions being answered by our very special guests. With that being said, on today's show is a British content creator. Prior to the events of 2020, Danny worked in the media and entertainment industry, creating events and exhibitions for bands, including the Rolling Stones. Since the pandemic, he has remolded himself for the online world in an attempt to tackle modern day issues and help people better understand the complicated landscape of politics, human behavior, and injustice. He now produces weekly political and satirical content on social media to his ever expanding audience and fighting the good fight. Please welcome to the podcast, Mr. Danny Price.
Hey everyone.
Welcome. Hey. Welcome to the show. What colour do you want the sky if you could choose it, Danny? Any choices? Or?
Maybe lilac, man. Lilac's pretty cool.
That's you a funky good one. Fucker.
I like
a funky guy. Yeah.
I was thinking maybe the sky in Minneapolis has to be purple. Maybe in different places, the sky should be different colours, depending on where you are.
That'd
like
be
once
great.
You get to like Mississippi, it just turns brown. That'd be nice and poetic as well, because then every day would be black and brown. And those people won't be able to handle it. So that could work as well.
That's good.
A pink sky could work as well. I could do a pink sky.
I think my first choice would have been a pink one, but I thought purple's a bit cooler, you know?
Yeah, vanilla? Purple's like cool. The film?
Or like, it can go to a purple. Vanilla? Oh, yeah, that could work as well. I think if you have a vanilla sky, then you could have a very big distinction between different like weather systems. So you'd know, like maybe... If the weather worked the same way that, like, you know, a litmus test works. So when the weather's really good, it's like if it's hot, you know it's hot because the sky is red. And when it's cold, the sky is like a darker shade of blue. So you could just look out your window for sure and be like, I won't get anywhere. you could just tell. And I think that would work perfectly for everyone.
Yeah, it's a good point. How's things with you, Danny? Are you well?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm pretty tired, but, you know, I've got this thing where I just get up really, really early.
I've seen you written about. Yeah, you've said stuff about that.
Yeah,
before,
like I like to get up at like 5 o'clock and like just decide to punish myself by going jogging, going for walks, and doing like, you know, stupid stuff. You know.
Yeah, I mean that sounds insane to get up at 5 o'clock.
Oh yeah, like I just started yoga, and I hate every minute of it. From the minute it starts, I want it to stop. So I get up at 5 and I go to Clapham Junction, which is like. An hour away from me, just to do an hour of a big stretch in it, really, let's be honest.
Yeah, I get it. But that being said, when you're up that early, is it a lot more quiet and tranquil? Because I feel like that's a big part of that puts me off from going to the gym, is that I'm not that sociable when it comes to exercise and stuff. And I always look for an excuse not to go to a gym. And normally it's other people will say something. I'd be like, I can't believe someone said that. I'm going home.
Nope. Oh, mate. Yeah, it's great to get up really early and just go outside and just, you know, because I just don't like people. You've seen my videos. I don't like anyone. Just go out and just do my thing. And then I can stay at home. Like from midday, I'm at home and I just don't leave the house.
It's cool, man. I mean, they say if you exercise early on before, like, you know, you start everything else, it's like the same as going to the gym and getting it all out of the way. And I like that idea, to be getting out of the way before, like, the commuters start making their way to work and stuff. Let's get it done.
Let me tell you something. It sounds good. When it's not your choice and it's the choice of a small man who lives next door, it ain't as fucking good. I'll tell you that much.
I bet it was good when you was making him, though, Howard. That's what it's about, Howard. Responsibility. I bet when you were making that baby, you was having all the fun, weren't you?
I just want him... Do you know what I want him to do, Dane? I just want him to pick up a book and just leave me alone for an hour or two. Just stay in bed for an hour or two, you know? You'll be fine. You don't need
anything. You'll say that, Howard, then time will come around and you'll be like, hey there, buddy, you want to talk to your daddy? You'll be like, I'm reading, get out of my room! And then you'll be like, sunrise, sunset.
Oh, are we talking about a child?
Yes.
I thought he had a little neighbour. I was like, what? Is it, can you live next door to Peter Dinklage or what? What's going on?
No, he's a little man that I invented with my wife. I never talk about him, as listeners know. And he just kind of consumes your existence, doesn't it? And he just makes loads of noise in the morning. So you're like...
I really thought you was on about a little kid. He's like, gets up early and just exercises and like just does your...
Mad trance really early. Early in the morning,
just getting crazy. But it's fun. Howard's paternal journey is punctuated by my childless journey, where I'm like, everything's fine. So Howard's become a lot more conservative when it comes to children, whereas I'm quite liberal. Right. So he's like, this kid won't leave me alone, and I'm like, but you'll miss having that. Howard, and he's like, I made him with my wife. I'm like, he's your only evidence that you were ever on this earth, Howard. That's how much he. That's how important he is.
Yeah, and you don't have a kid then, no?
I get whatever. Sometimes I'll be walking around my house naked, so you know, rolling that up, smoking it up, you know, all taking care of myself.
We'll do a swap one day, but that won't last very long, I imagine.
You'd be surprised.
It's probably time for a question, isn't it, Dane, as the format of this show dictates?
Absolutely. Danny, as our very esteemed guest, we invite you to ask our first question, which can be any question you'd like, which we'd like to discuss for like 15 minutes or some change. And Howard would like to pose a question to you, which we'll discuss for the same amount of time. And then finally, I'd like to ask you a question, which we can discuss 15 minutes or so. And then we'd like to leave you the space to tell our good listeners where we can find out more about your good works and hear more about your stuff. How does that sound?
That sounds great. I have a question. It's fine. Do I just go? Just ask?
Yeah, the floor is yours.
Bring it on.
Obviously, it's for both of you because that's what we're doing here. So with the state of, you know, the current situation that we are all very aware of in this country and maybe the world, actually, how do you feel about, you know, the entertainment world being predominantly left, and I don't like to use the term left or right because I apply common sense to everything and right and wrong, but the entertainment world being dominated by the left, the creatives of the left, however, hardly any of them, a very, very small percentage of them, you know, actually do anything to change the status quo.
What inspired this question, Danny? It's a really good question, mate.
Well, I was born into the entertainment industry. I work in the entertainment industry. Some of these people that are not doing anything, I know them. And it's like, we have these conversations and I'm just like, you know, you should do more. We should do more. So I think it's something that needs to be touched on because at this point, they are like the only people that have the reach. I did a video last year or it was this year. And I got 10 of the biggest creatives in the country and I tallied up all of their social media followings. And it was millions. This country alone, in the UK alone. And they have the power to change it.
Well, and it was a fascinating example of what you're talking about. Did you see the Met Gala thing the other day?
Yes, of course.
In America. And Alexander
Ocasio-Cortez
said, tax the rich on the back of her designer dress at a banquet and event that cost millions and millions and millions and millions of pounds. That if you're the liberal person making a liberal stance, some might suggest you might not want to do it at that place, but maybe that's not correct, Dane. What do you think? That was a quite a good, interesting example of what Danny's chatting about.
No, I mean, there's frequent examples, but I think it's a really good question, and I have a theory. This theory, I will say, is based on a YouTube video I saw, but I'd gotten a hold of a video which was described as a North Korean propaganda film, but it basically referred to the fact that there used to be a synergy between being an artist and a liberal, or you know, a person who is involved in expression, and also having that sense of activism. Because, you know, I guess part of your complex as an artist is that you are somebody who is tapping into more, what I'm looking for is like more metaphysical resources to create something. If you're creating something that's emotionally provocative or it's supposed to evoke emotional reactions, then you're in touch with like, you know, other people. And so it was a given, like, let's say somewhere around the time of like the late 60s and 70s, that activism was a natural part of the world of arts and entertainment. What they say happened in the 80s is that as, you know, entertainment and artistic expression became a lot more commercially viable with, you know, the advent of television and video and films growing in size as industries in the 80s, then they were able to kind of hijack these narratives and begin to manipulate activism so rebellions themselves became commodified. An example of that being the fact that someone like Che Guevara was, you know, vehemently opposed to the idea of capitalism and consumerism.
Mm.
But a lot of people probably remember Che Guevara most recently for appearing on a bunch of T-shirts that were real big in like the early noughties when Jay-Z wore one for his Unplugged thing.
Yeah, that's right.
So they became quite big. And so what I think, that's part of the thing that's happened, is that the powers that be, where before they were able to, they would try to suppress artistic expression through censorship and through ideas of conservatism and, like, you know, is it the Mary Whitehouse experience and that kind of thing, or McCarthyism, is that now they've been able to co-opt art and, unfortunately, and this might be down to a number of economic reasons, for especially in the advent of, like, the digital world, artists, because it's harder for them to realise a revenue stream just from the creation and the distribution or sale of their product, are a lot more dependent on corporations. And by them having the power in their hands and having unregulated power in their hands, they've been able to turn capitalism en vogue. And basically they've been able to make activism a product. And when something becomes commodified as a product, then it means that, you know, once you can commodify and there's a price on it, then the value of it will be dependent upon the money that's spent on it. So, for example, when Pepsi did this very recent campaign with Kendall Jenner, and they were like, we could end all the isms and racisms in the space of a minute and a half advert. And even the fact that now corporations, through the use of like digital means and algorithms, are now able to manipulate, they can even manipulate outrage and they can manipulate social activism. And
it's happened with the Premiership footballer. Football, right?
A perfect example
is been turned into something. Yeah. So they're like, oh, the footballers have given us a thing we can latch onto.
Yeah. And what's happened is that there has been this, and that commodification of activism means that now some people realize they can actually make money from, I guess, embodying what's now referred to as being woke. And so that's why a lot of people don't do anything, is because, more simply put, like, if you're an artist and you've been broke and you're in the grind and you're struggling for years, unfortunately, it probably becomes a lot easier to buy you. And right.
But I think there's an element of it. I'll be interested to see what Danny thinks. Where if you took, let's say, you know, 20 of the big influencers that you could think could make a difference to some of the world's problems, right, Danny? Let me put them all in a room. They're in the room next door. What's next door? Your kitchen. Let's pretend. They're all in your kitchen, right? So like, if you could, I think the problem would be, could you actually get them to agree on what they supported? And I think an interesting example of when it was something that did work was the civil rights movement in the 60s, where it's a couple of different examples where you'd see very famous, generally white people, because it was predominantly more famous white people at the time, getting together to go, No, this is fucking nuts, man. Like, we completely support equality, blah, 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 you know. And it was a very easy one for them all to unify over. Whereas my point would be that, Danny, I don't know what you think. It's difficult for these people to unify on stuff.
I mean, like, that's why I say that I don't like to refer to it as left and right. I like to refer to it as good and bad and right and wrong. And, like, for example, like, I think we could all agree, and I think that they would all agree, that, you know, everybody should have the right to live comfortably, you know, or free healthcare, and, you know, not have to, like, struggle, and not just exist, you know? I think that's something that everybody, because everybody wants to do more than just exist. So I think that, like, you know, that's something that they would all agree on.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Back to your point, further to your point, Danny, is that, like, art is supposed to be, like, you know, because what you're referring to is sentience and consciousness and the idea of someone wanting to thrive as well as just exist.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of artistic expressions. So for me, before I became a comedian, I worked in an office. I liked making people laugh and having a laugh and that, but comedy didn't really seem like a viable career to me because I just didn't know how to go about it in this country. But then at the same time, I guess one of the existential reasons I ended up doing it was because part of me was like, when it comes to art or just expression in general as human beings, this is the only thing we have to really chronicle our humanity by.
Right.
In that, you can buy a dope Rolex. See, when you die, it's going to be a Rolex that can be sold on or pawned or whatever. And it really has no reflection of who you are as a person. Whereas if you sang a song, even if you're a one-hit wonder, there is now evidence of you taking your consciousness and making it something tangible that we can all continue to digest when you're no longer here. So even if you look at, like, a rapper like Tupac has been dead since 1996, but his influence continues to this day and equally as strong because he was able to take his consciousness and his emotional disposition or his complex and make that into something tangible for people to consume and understand who that person was. And so that's how important art is. And I think because people, there are powers that be that are aware of that, to be honest, and maybe I'm speaking as an artist, is that I think they are more than aware that if people continue to observe or follow that trend of, you know, self-actualization and realize and making your consciousness or expressing yourself in ways that don't require any material things, they lose their power base.
Yeah.
So it for them, it's if they can subvert activism and, you know, positive ideology like feminism and stuff, if you can take an idea like feminism and instead of, you know, men and women and trans women and trans men have an open dialogue about our ideas about gender and equality and continue to have an open dialogue where we continue to have a reciprocal relationship with each other, you can get people to buy pink hats.
Yeah, of
course. It's much easier to buy a pink hat.
Yeah.
In the same way that if we, instead of looking at the horrors of war and realizing that it's the true predator of humanity and the fact that the after effects continue for generations to come and it's probably the most destructive phenomenon that humanity has ever created, then you could probably put people off war. But war's profitable, so if you just make people buy poppies,
yeah,
it's much easier, much easier for you to commodify the activism. So in the case of people nowadays, like, it's an interesting thing where, you know, influence is still a relatively new term. And I guess because of that, the term itself has been pedestalized to have importance. But what the question that's not been asked is what an influencer influences.
Yeah, that's right.
Because
it's a fascinating time for celebrity culture because it changed so much in our, you know, in our lifetime.
It basically changed so much, it was as significant as crack from cocaine, in that celebrity used to be a byproduct of you reaching a level of notoriety because of your talent, or, you know, the more people you know, so that's how you become famous, because that guy's a good
long
rock star.
Long gone.
So now you've been able to distill just the profile of being a celebrity and people knowing who you are away from having a discernible talent. The thing about when you have a talent is that normally your journey for you to realize your talent and hone it requires, you know, joy, pain, loss, crest, trough in life for you to get a more rounded idea of what your art is and who you are and how you would, and by the same token, how you express who you are. And what comes with that is that you, as most artists, will have a standard for yourself. So you're like, I require this environment for me to express myself the way I express myself. I need this to be this way for me to perform the art I want to perform to attract my fans. Whereas if someone is just famous for being famous, you can take away that away from them, and then they become nobody.
I think the
it's much easier for you to manipulate that and be like, you sell these clothes, you don't talk on this issue, you don't say anything about this, and you can still be famous.
You mean like management, basically?
Well, yeah, just the power to be. Because the more dependent somebody is upon realizing their status from that said power, and the more leverage one party has, then that party will call the shots. So, like, for example, if you take somebody like, if you take an independent artist, someone like, I don't know.
Dua Lipa.
is she independent?
No, I'm joking.
She's not independent. So someone like Dua Lipa, like, to be honest, that there's more of a business model behind that where she just has to
no
show
risks.
Up.
There'll be no risks.
Or like a Pixie Lott where, you know, every aspect of that brand is taken care of to satisfy an algorithm or satisfy a demographic. Then really you just have to show up to work. But what it means is that you're very interchangeable with anybody else. Whereas if you're the only person that can do what you do, if you're Prince, I know you can play the guitar like Prince, you can name your price. Whereas people nowadays, because the barrier to entry to reach celebrity is much lower than it is, it means the way to leave that market is so much easier as well.
So that's why the key word you said there, Dane, though, the key word you said there was price, right? And that's the difference, is that art was once upon a time about the doing of the art. Danny, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
people
definitely
believed in their shit that they did, whether they got paid or not. And if they got paid a bit on the way out, great. But you know what? We all became so incentivized by money. And I always think when Dane knows I bring Bob Dylan up in a lot of things, but Dylan went Christian in the 70s. He released two very, very, you know, properly religious. He was a Jew, obviously, but he suddenly did two Christian albums, and everyone fucking hated him for it. And like all the music press, and everyone gave him like 1 out of 5. And the music's not that bad actually. But it's so interesting that from a political perspective, like as in like, is it political to suddenly become really Christian? Yeah, it actually is. And so people just completely dismissed him for years. And I think I look at that example and go, God, you think of how rare it would be for someone to make that massive, hey, by the way, I really, really believe in Jesus Christ. And then that's it. They've suddenly become, I suddenly really, really believe in anti-immigration. Even if they did say,
it can happen.
Said that.
Well, here's a perfect example. A guy that I idolized said that I need to tell the story of where blacks came from glory and showed them what they need to do in the game in his first song. And fast forward 10 years and he was like, slavery was a choice.
Yeah. Oh, right. Wow.
Because there was a point in time where selling out was the worst thing you could do in entertainment. Whereas now it's actively encouraged. You're not made until you're in a position whereby you are the face endorsing a particular product or you are the face in China. There was a time where the idea of you selling out or kowtowing to corporate interest was the worst thing you could do as an artist. Whereas now a culture has been created where the more your show business airs towards the side of business, the more respected you are.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we all say, like, think about it. We all say billionaires need to go. This wealth inequality is terrible. But now that Beyonce and Jay-Z are millionaires, everyone's cool with it.
Very true. Very, very good point. Yeah.
I hope that is a good answer, Danny.
It's a good answer.
A brilliant, brilliant one of the most thought provoking questions we've had for a while, eh, Dane?
No, definitely. And I think it's something I think about a lot, as I'm sure you know, Howard.
No, of course, man. Of course. Well, that's what this podcast is partly all about. Hmm. I've got a question today that is interesting, because I was wondering what your question was going to be, Danny. I've been watching your video. Everyone should go and watch all your stuff on your Instagram. I really enjoyed spending time on it. You know,
thank you, man.
I'm gonna make a comment on it that I hope won't be considered offensive. If it does, I'm really sorry.
Too much swearing, isn't it?
No, I was actually going to say how much of it it feels full of anger.
Yeah.
I'm someone who grew up like plenty of anger in my soul. Rage Against the Machine was the band for me as a kid. Do you know what I mean? Like I've always admired anger in art. My question to you and to Dane and to anyone who wants to write in and talk to us is, do you think the anger you feel improves your life?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And that is not to be judgmental. That is me not trying to be judgmental, because it sounds I'm giving you a loaded question.
No, right? I get it. Like, that is a great question. And it is something that, yeah, I do actually talk about this quite a lot. So I'm like 36 years old. I've been through therapy and whatever, you know, grown-up stuff. But like, loads of times, a bunch of times in throughout my life, people have said that I am secretly happy when I'm angry. So I'm from Wolverhampton. I get really angry. Like, when I get angry, my Wolverhampton accent comes in. It's just like, you know, and it is quite funny. And like, yes, and loads of people said that I just used to enjoy being angry. And I think, like, in a kind of in a secret way, like, I think maybe I am, because like, it's me being passionate, you know? And like, yeah, definitely. And like, a therapist has told me do you feel like you're yourself when you're angry? And I'm like, yeah. Like, what are we going to do? And it's like, are you violent? I'm like, no. It's like, well, just carry on doing what you're doing and it's fine. So like, no, as long as nobody's getting hurt and I am expressing myself, I absolutely do think that anger, it's part of my character. Before I started doing these videos, it was like, it was just a thing where, like, you know, I was just like the funny kid in school that would just like get angry and just do really stupid, ridiculous things that like was harmless, but really, really funny. And it was like tongue in cheek sort of cartoon anger. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like a way of creativeness for me.
But when, it's a fascinating thing that you said about being funny and the anger being hand in hand with being funny.
Yeah, it's like when you, you know, there's like that thing in the films where a guy's got to babysit a baby and the baby's like crying and then he hurts himself and then she laughs or whatever. It's like a thing, it's like that. It's like that in real life.
Yeah, it's fascinating, right, Dane? Because, you know, comedy, the basis of comedy is so often based around someone getting angry at something. And I'd say, you know, in there's a big stream of Black and Jewish comedians who would definitely, in my opinion, have a massive train of thought that comes from anger, right, Dane?
Oh no, definitely. And it's very interesting when, you know, when Danny says that, like, he would display anger but kind of in a somewhat facetious way. Like, that's kind of how I discovered my funny bones as well. Like, people wouldn't be like, oh, Danny's just so funny and blah blah. It'd more be like I'd be having a rant and get pissed off about something, and I guess the level of embellishment I would do would make people laugh. And, you know, there is a certain comfort in that, because laughter, that's like a form of validation, especially if you're getting a positive reinforcement when you get angry. If you get pissed off and you're met with a smile or people laughing, that in itself can lead to a dopamine release for you as well, because it's almost like you're having this catharsis and you're like, this is pissing me off. Like, you know, a example, like, traffic jams are pissing me off. Like, we're still here. Like, and you might say something to the person in front, like, I know you can't hear me, but you can't drive. And the person next to you starts laughing because they can see the absurdity of your actions. For me, that can sometimes be, that can kind of be therapeutic, because it's having that explosive expression of something that frustrates you can sometimes, I think, be a lot healthier than internalizing it. Because the thing is, I think a lot of people, because human beings are a social species, a lot of the time when we experience the same phenomena, like when we see violence or we see traumatic scenes, that affects all of us negatively. How we choose to deal with it varies from person to person. Some people emulate that or replicate the behavior if they come from an abusive household or observed abuse, because that allows them to reclaim control of the situation and therefore helps them to process that trauma. Some people tend to internalize it because they wanted to display alternate behavior to the behavior they've seen, but that can have a negative effect, because if they continue to internalize it, it can manifest in other ways and have a physical effect on you. So for me, the anger thing, I think the issue for me isn't necessarily anger. It's more about maybe anger requires the same amount of... I think it should be given the same credence that we give to, like, happiness. Like, if we say someone's happy or they're in a good mood, there are a lot of synonyms that we have to describe if someone's happy or content or chuffed or, and maybe with anger, we just need to give the same reverence to the emotion, because remember, it just exists as a part of the emotional complex too. Because if you didn't have anger, you wouldn't be able to distinguish contentment.
Mm.
So you know, people that are constantly in toxic environments, they're not even able to recognize a tranquil one because that's so normalized to them. So sometimes like having that anger is important because it means that you recognize like positive environments with the same level of vigilance. And just,
but I think there's got to be a little bit of it, though, that comes down to your personal happiness and your personal anger. So like I might get fucked off that my knee hurts, and let's be honest, you might find some humor in that, or someone might be interested, but no one's really going to care at the same level as when I say, like, so like, you know, when I was going through Danny's stuff, I was like, cool. So like Afghanistan, Boris Johnson, you know, I could do that list of stuff. Now the people would question, and these people are wrong, by the way. I'm just going to put this into the
clarify that they're wrong first. That's good. That's
Yeah. I'm just going to point out they're wrong, but like, would say that you, Danny, getting angry about Boris Johnson is pointless because what does it achieve? And that's obviously bollocks, because if everyone lived like that, then what would the world become? Do you ever find yourself going, God, fuck me, I can't deal with it.
All the time. Like I think I've said it in a load of my videos that like, and I've said it to myself, like it feels like I'm shouting at a brick wall, which technically I am, because that's how I film. My phone is just there against the wall. But you know, I do feel like that. But like, then I get people just say like the way that I, because I'm like dyslexic and dyspraxic, and I have like loads of issues with understanding information and getting information out. And the way that I see things is like the way that the politics and the modern society and the way things are presented to us, we are made to think they're complex in a way. But realistically, I just like to apply common sense to it. And then that's how I make sense of it. And that's what when I say what I say, other people are like, no, I've never really thought about it like that. But it is just like, it's so simple when you put it like that. It's like, it's almost like we've been taught to think that, oh, politics isn't for me because there's too much going on.
There you go.
You know, and it's not like that at all, you know.
Nail on the head.
It's like, it's so simple. It's just common sense. And that's how I deal with it. And that's how, you know, when I do get angry and like, but it's just putting things in that box and just being like, this is how it is, black and white. Like, you know, it's not advanced for advanced people, or you know, you can just understand this. It's really this simple. And so people message me and be like, yeah, we've never thought about it like that, or thank you for putting it in the ways that I can understand. And that's what I get out of it.
Yeah, no, I think it works. And you know what the thing is as well, is that we have to remember that 90% of human communication is non-verbal anyway. So if you think about also culturally in the UK, we are encouraged to maintain a deadpan expression or stiff upper lip when we're addressing each other and even when we're expressing ourselves. And so because of that, there's probably a large contribute to the reason as to why when people do display passionate emotion, it's perceived as being quite explosive anger, because British people are encouraged to have a stiff upper lip. Whereas if you look at countries like France or, you know, like Colombia, to have intense emotional outbursts when you become disillusioned or disenfranchised by government is very, very natural. Like even before Colombia was known for cartels and stuff like that, like a large part of political unrest was referred to as la violencia, which is like just madness and violence and anarchy, or like, you know, France have had a revolution. And I think in this country, we've not really had that. And it's because we are told, like, Howard, think about it. How many times in the last decade did you see a sign telling you to keep calm and carry on?
Well, I see one in my house, I think. Right. My wife put it up.
Now, the last time that slogan was seen was during the war. Do you think it's a coincidence that that's been encouraged, and now within that same decade of Tory rule, you've seen NHS being privatised?
Oh, but it's what I've said to you a few times, Dane, right? Yeah. I've said to you a few times. We were taught at school that propaganda was something that the Nazis did.
Yeah.
It wasn't what we lived through every fucking year of our lives, which is clearly what is still going on.
If you were paying attention, it may elicit some feelings of anger. But if you think about, like, you know, even when George Orwell describes the state of the UK under English socialism and basically one party, which is indistinguishable from any other one, it was encouraged that they encouraged what was called newspeak, where people would gradually be deprived of the language required for them to express anger, disillusionment, and political dissent. Because if you can't say it, or you can't ask for your freedom, then you, or if you can't, you know, describe your freedom or articulate, you won't be able to ask for your freedom. And you think about, we live in a world now where, you know, media now uses public opinion to reinforce their journalism, and we've been reduced to like emojis in order to express ourselves as human beings. Like, we need anger, I think, because normally when it comes to like revolution or social upheaval or change, it's normally preceded by someone being like, this is some fucking bullshit. So that's the thing sometimes, is that, like, you know, you can always encourage conformity if people are content. So, for example, one thing we've learned from the French Revolution is that if you leave people to get hungry enough, they'll go mental and they'll overthrow you. So nowadays, your most impoverished people are your most obese, because people know that you don't go in the street and march when you're too overweight, or toxins from the food you're consuming slows you down.
I tell you the one thing I'd add, Dane, before we wrap this bit up, is to say that harnessing anger for good purposes is a challenge, right, Danny? Like, what I think you do is I wouldn't call it a good cause, like it's a charity, but you know what I mean? It's a good cause, because like people who might take in what you do might think, and I think I feel this way about this podcast, you know, we're trying to further conversation so that, and sometimes Dane, me, I mean, I definitely got really fucking wound up a couple of weeks ago. I can't remember what it was, but I remember shouting and getting told off by my wife who's upstairs. But like, you know what I mean? We are.
Can I just say that doesn't really represent the views of Dane Baptiste? Tara, I found your tone to be most affable and with a
distinct warmth. I think I properly lost it about something.
Who's complaining about that little guy who lives next door?
but harnessing that anger, you know, we all get to do that on this show. I think for people who maybe don't perform in some kind of art form, online or otherwise, harnessing it is the challenge, right? What, doing something with it?
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. I mean, I'd never used to be into politics whatsoever. And funny enough, that's when I was in the worst mental state of my entire life. Like, I always thought, like, you know, it's not for me. I always just say, like, you know, it's always down to who's the best liar in political parties, which is true to an extent, mostly, actually. But I just didn't want anything to do with it. I didn't want to look at it. I didn't want to know about it. Like, the collapse of the banks, the financial collapse happened in, like, 2007. I was like, I don't care. You know, I'm not bothered. And, like, I was, like, at the time, I think about it now, and at the time I was like, God, I was a dick back then. Do you know what I mean? Like, just my day-to-day life was just me being a dick about everything and, you know, not really understanding or anybody, or putting myself, having any empathy or putting myself in somebody else. You know, I was just like a bit of a wrong one, really. And it's only since I started paying attention and speaking about it that I'm like, you know what, I'm from Wolverhampton, you know, I moved down to London to get away from all of like the gang shit and all of the horrible shit that happened up there, you know? And now I'm just like, there's not an ounce of violence in me, do you know what I mean? At all. And people are like, I couldn't imagine you like up in Wolverhampton with all of them wrongers. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty good, isn't it? But like, I'm in the best mental state ever here, talking about things that I should absolutely be angry about, that should drive me to be like increasingly angry and, you know, act out like how I was and people around me was before, you know?
It's fascinating, man. It genuinely is fascinating. It's been an amazing chance to talk about something that I think about all the time, Dane. We get angry on this show, right, Dane? You've got fucking livid on this show.
Of course, and it's not like I have no control of it. It's a justifiable emotion in the same way that if I was explaining intense joy, like when you think about it, we even sometimes as human beings, we are afraid of the true potential of our emotional expression. Because sometimes if someone's too happy, as human beings brought up in a capitalist society with like a zero-sum game, it makes us start thinking, oh, why are they so fucking happy for? Like, who's going to be that happy? You know? Because that's how we're conditioned. We're conditioned to bridle ourselves with it emotionally for some reason, even though we don't know what can be revealed. And because we do that, we become so entrenched in this emotional repression, then we got to go fork out how much money an hour to a psychiatrist to teach us how to do this thing that we should know how to do in the first place, because that's how we have been born.
Do you know, so when I'm most angry in my life, I usually find a place where I can be completely on my own and I shout the word fuck as loud and as long as possible. And after that, I feel a bit better.
I'm glad, and that's a good. And if that coping mechanism helps you, but then you could ask yourself, Howard, if there were more junctures in your day to day where you wanted to say fuck and you didn't, would it arrive at this boiling point where you have to have this massive catharsis? Because people say that I'm moaning, I'm angry, but really it's because I would rather focus on individual incidents where I feel that I'm unhappy and discuss the resolution than continue to internalize and get to that point where it's beyond reproach or it's...
I would tell you one thing then. I would say that when I do that fuck, it's often my fault what I'm angry about.
I mean, like, a lot of time, people are angry at themselves a lot of time as well, because anger as well, a lot of time, is a overt manifestation of sometimes more esoteric feelings that we can't really express. So sometimes I might feel angry at guilt because they say, for example, if I hear about a tragedy that happened somewhere nearby me, I might be angry because I reflect on my own obliviousness to the dangers that might be for a woman, for example. Say a woman was killed where I live. I might be angry because I'm like, I may be responsible for the collective negligence that allowed for a young woman to be killed.
Yeah.
I might be angry because I feel guilty about the state of patriarchy, which allows women to die without any justice. I might just be angry because as a human being, I understand the concept of life and how that important that is. So I am angry because that's my empathy manifesting for her family members and people that have lost somebody.
No,
so anger is not just, negative emotion, toxicity, made tangible. It's just a manifestation of very different things. Like, I'd say a perfect example being anger, particularly within my community, for a lot of men, is is a defense mechanism, because it's about feelings of inadequacy or feelings of fear. So I create this veneer of anger and rage because then I'm protected.
Yeah, 100%.
It's a fight or flight response.
Yeah. Well said. It's time for the last question, but do you know what? I'm so glad I asked that question, because I had a really boring other question I was going to ask, and that was definitely better choice. it was good to talk about it. But yes, Dane, it's over to you for the final question of today's show, mate.
Well, basically, the questions have been so good, man, and they've been so well linked that I just want my last question to be a combination of two to just keep the ball rolling. So, Danny, you mentioned before that you had made a list of analytics for prolific influencers and how much their narrative had referred to, activism or things that matter, right?
Oh, you mean how much reach that they...
reach, that reach. So I guess I imagine that it was kind of disheartening to find that people with all the reach they had don't really talk about stuff that could matter when they know they could probably make a difference.
Absolutely, yeah.
So my question really is, like, myself as a comedian, my job or my vocation is now transcended into, like, podcasting, and there are now elements of creation that are outside of comedy. The same as yourself, like working at events and public speaking, and that's blossomed into something else.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can describe all of ourselves as content creators, influencers, etc. And so... before, I guess, with being a comedian or entertainer, you have a responsibility, which I imagine you have as well if you're a content creator.
Yeah.
I say that all to say this, like, because what makes you angry about the phenomenon of influencers? Given that, you know, some of it can be used for good, some of it can be used for bad, what makes you angry about influencing, being an influencer, and influencers in general?
Oh man, well, I hate influencers. That's so I have because, like, working in the events industry and running venues and whatever, like, I've came across loads of them, and I know loads of influencers. I was at an event a couple of weeks ago, and a load of influencers I know called me like the Deadpool of influencers, because there's nothing. I just call them out. I call them out all the time. Like, it's like, basically I work hard. So, like, for me, what really gets me angry is the, just people that want stuff for, like, you know, let me come and eat for free at your restaurant. I've got like 20,000 followers or something like that. Or, you know, stuff like that, like the sort of entitlement. Whereas me, like, I don't get sponsorships or whatever, but I do get loads of free stuff because I do work with brands, as in, like, you know, we'd launch like a football boot at my venue or whatever, or I do a load of PR for a food company or whatever. And like, I work to, you know, get paid and also get the benefits from that. Whereas, like, you know, with influence, it's mainly a, like, you know, I'm really hot, so, you know, you can just give me a free fucking tank top or whatever.
And like, it's unknown, and I'm allowing you to contribute to my
growth.
It's like a Ponzi scheme kind of thing, or a pyramid scheme, isn't it?
It is, man. That's the main thing that winds me up about influencers. That, well, that and the combination of them not doing much. But
that's a very, very important thing you've said there, because there's probably levels to our hatred that we can go into in this question. The first level is superficiality, is what you're talking about. Mm. The superficiality of, hey, look at this picture of my life. Do you know what? Pay me to be part of this life. It's like, when did looking good basically equate to a good person?
it's mad, isn't it? It's
I know when. Sorry to interrupt, guys. I know when. I know when. It was in high school. That's when.
Yeah, man.
When you were in high school and you had the hormones and the inclinations of an adult, but you still had the mind of a child, that's when you discovered stupid ideas like in your adolescence, like conformity and groups to be a part of. And self-identity politics. Because when you start to become an adult, you have to start thinking about your self-image and how do I contextualize my existence? What group am I a part of? What tribe do I belong to?
The idea that permeates our lives.
But think about it. So then in school, you would have the popular girl in school or the popular guy in school. And when you think about it, there was no real merit as to why this person was given preferential treatment to everybody else other than they were good looking or they looked like they were nice or whatever. And you really, and you know, we, at the time, if we're in school, most of us all have dependents, so our parents determine what kind of lives we had. But we didn't think about that as kids. Like, a girl's good looking, she goes home, you don't know if she's going home to squat or how she lives. And so I think with social media in particular and influencers is that there's obviously a part of, particularly in the developed world, in the Western world, a part of us that hangs on to our youth because we live in a time where youth is commodified and we've regret, or it's because social media and human beings existing with artificial intelligence online is a teenager. That's what I mean. So if you think about our interactions on chat rooms, from chat rooms up until now, where that's been about 16 years, give or take. So our consciousness as we exist in social media is a teenager, which means we've regressed to this point whereby we are still looking for tribes that we belong to and we are still struggling with our self-image and we are still chasing somewhat unrealistic aspirations in terms of aesthetic, just like we did when we were kids, which is why you have people nowadays who are like, I want to have, like a kid would be like, I want to have the nicest trainers. But it's like, yeah, but you can't afford to take care of yourself. But no one cares because you've got the nice trainers. No one cares if your stomach's empty and stuff like that. And it's the same way now you live in a world where it's like, before, like a girl might want the biggest boobs, but then you realize if your boobs are too big, your back is going to hurt after a while. But now we've regressed back to that point whereby that same level of unrealistic aspiration, because we don't have the benefit of wisdom and experience to process what we see online, we're now going back to that point whereby we will chase these same aspirational aesthetics without thinking about the fact that it's not realistic. So, for example, we both go on the internet, influencers will show you they're getting free food, they're eating in Michelin-star restaurants, they're having haute cuisine, they can afford a Rolex. But statistically, out of every 10 person on the internet from this part of the world, none of those people will not be making over 100 grand a year.
Oh, man. Yeah, I completely agree.
But if you were to look at the internet, we're awash with wealth. Like, if you look at social media, you would forget that in 2008, money died, bruv. It really died. And I think it's not a coincidence that we started seeing the rise in the use of algorithms and social media and the celebration of influencers, because it's like somebody wants to forget that we all went broke 12 years ago.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of like an escapism, you know, for people like looking in from the outside. Like, you know, it's like how we watch cooking shows. Half the time, we're never going to make the thing that they put on the fucking cooking show. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you're part of it. You get to be part of it.
Yeah, you it's get to be like part
the,
of it, yeah.
Same way we like to watch porn as well, because like people want to be able, especially when you reach a certain age or you're at a certain age where you don't have the capabilities to do certain things, to be able to live vicariously through somebody else is a big part of the human complex in terms of like aspiration and want. And again, when you're doing that in a capitalist world whereby we now, because, and think about it as well, Howard, like we're at a point now where if you, like, we tell kids as a matter of principle, go to school, get an education, be a big, good person, don't break the law, and you can realize the apex of your professional aspirations.
Yeah, I think
Boris
it's
Johnson
madness.
Is Prime Minister, and Donald Trump has been president. So if I was a fucking child in school now, and you said to me, work hard and stay in school and be a good person, I'd say, why the fuck should I do that when I can be a piece of shit
and I can be the president of the United States. I can cheat on my wife with a porn star. I can cheat on my other wife. I can steal money from people at university. I can go on the fucking radio, or you can record me saying, fuck a bitch, I'll grab her by the pussy. And I can still be the president. So why do I have to be a good person?
No, I agree with that. I agree with that completely. Like,
years and years, black people have been told, baby fathers and blah, blah, blah. Barack Obama's good. He hasn't got no children outside of marriage. He's got his wife and blah, blah, blah. We don't even know how many baby mothers Boris Johnson has. And he's the prime minister. So if you are a child where, in archaically, you've heard these binary ideas of good and evil and right and wrong and moral and amoral, that's all fine, theoretically. But realistically, if you have enough money, you can do what the fuck you want, is what we have taught an entire generation of children for the last 20 years.
And how do you get the money? How do you get the money? Look good.
Yes. There you go. And if you look good,
Look good.
You can. And if you don't look good, while you think you look good,
steal it.
You can steal it. Or you can buy it. Or you can fake it. As long as you do it, that's all that matters. And now we're in a point now as well where the quality of these phenomena is quantitative. What that means is, if I showed you something, Danny, that was shit, I'd be like, bro, look at this. Look how shit this is. These people are terrible. You'd be like, yeah, that's shit. But now you live in the world. If I show it to you and you watch it as well, that's two hits.
Yes.
And
course.
All that matters to advertisers are metrics.
Yeah.
Which means they can say, yeah, everyone says they hate Rebecca Black this Friday, but it's got 1 million views.
Yeah.
So they don't care if it's damaging an industry or cheapening an art form or predisposing her to a level of notoriety she won't be able to handle or be able to handle when it goes. Then they don't give a shit because you help them to sell an idea, I guess. So, I mean, for me, in one way, that's what makes me angry about influencers, to answer my own question, is that I don't mind if you want to present a certain aesthetic of yourself, because as an entertainer, we can always create, incarnations of ourselves which are more larger than life, right?
Mm.
But if you know, like, for example, if you're someone that's selling the idea of body positivity, there needs to be regulation. In the same way that if I watch a TV show and I see a wrestler jump off a turnbuckle, it says, don't try this at home, because that's a trained professional.
Yeah, man.
If you're a recipient of cosmetic surgery, that is absolutely your choice. But don't go and fucking lie to children and say you're doing this because you're drinking fucking tea. That's what I'm saying.
Wise words. It is interesting, though, that tying this all together to wrap up the show, the fact that the amount of anger, just, you talk about influencers, vloggers, as they were. I feel that term vlogger is kind of dying a bit, Danny. Do you know what I mean? I think it's become...
I think it is.
It's more part of the promotional matrix of your influencer, isn't it, to do
exactly work, and I think people get so angry at that kind of, hey guys, just people can get so angry at it. I think it does say something about all of us and what it means that everyone now has a platform, and the fact that everyone has a platform means that if you don't feel like you're using yours, then actually it's quite easy just to go, well, fuck all these people for who are using theirs.
Well,
that doesn't mean they're right, by the way.
That's almost a good point that Danny made before when he said that, like, once I started actually paying attention to the world around me and I became disillusioned, that's when I became angry. And, we could argue maybe there is a vested interest in people controlling what information people have and how people are influenced to stop them becoming righteously angry and then, asking for something to change. So when you said we all have a voice to Howard, it's a good point, because I have a theory where I'm like, you can look at how human thought has regressed because it's been able to rely on technology a lot more.
Yeah.
Like, you can just click a link or something or get a post and cut and paste it, where it means you're not beholden to do a certain amount of research because some idiot's going to put something on YouTube, and the wealth of information, not knowledge, mind you, information.
Mm. Yeah.
Means you can thrive within an echo chamber that feeds you, which really is true democracy. And what I'm trying to say is, Howard, is that within human civilization before, like, democracy ain't that new. Oh, it's not that old, sorry. It's not that old, sorry. It's not that new either. But it's not that old, right?
Mm.
But I genuinely believe that when you have a world of inequality, want, deception, when you create democracy within that world, or when you have, as I should say, when you have democracy within politics and you have those two ideas together, yeah, that's why we have aristocracy. Because at some point, there are some people who are less enlightened than others. There are some people that are less inclined to use their awareness and their access to information positively. And so at some point, us as a very earlier civilization said, we can't let everybody have a voice. So you have to be someone who's representative of the general voice, and we listen to them. And that is the birth of modern government as we understand it, the Senate, et cetera, et cetera. The Greco-Roman models are still the one we use today. Now, because we are now existing, our consciousness exists in a new state on social media or on in the digital world. It's a new way to live. Like how you chat to people on Instagram, stuff like that, from around the world you've never met. Like even the way we met Danny, obviously I think the same way, but we didn't meet in a pub. It's a new way we meet.
Yeah.
Now, some people can rationalize that gift. Not everyone can handle that. So what I think is going to happen is you're going to see an aristocracy be born out of the democracy that is the internet. It's already happened now because that's why influencers have blue ticks.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
But then what happens is then is that now we're going to see a new political spectrum existing on social media, and it's going to remain to be seen how that's going to affect us and what anger and political dissidence and rebellion looks like in the digital world.
What? Mm. What?
Yeah, man.
A cliffhanger. Now, next week on Dame Baptiste Quiz and Everything, a monarchist who comes on and explains how that could work. No, but what a set of questions today, man. That's been like a brilliant episode.
I thought it would be good, and it was even better, Danny. Thank you so much for coming on. No,
thank you for having me, man. Thank you for having me.
For those who have not heard of your great works before, where can we find out more about you, please?
Well, basically, Facebook blocked me. And YouTube blocked me, but you can get me on Instagram. I'm Danny fucking Price. And I don't really use Twitter that much because I think Twitter's like for people that wouldn't shout at people in the street. So I don't really go on there that much. But for now, it's just Instagram, Danny fucking Price.
And I'm sure other places very soon as well, because as the word spreads.
We'll definitely hear on this podcast as well. And I think once people hear it, then I'm sure you'll be and you'll be a guest on many others. So we'd be happy to help get the Danny Price word out there.
I appreciate it.
Angry, you ain't paying attention, motherfuckers.
Exactly that.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming on, Danny. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, man. You've been listening to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything, hosted by Dane Baptiste. For more from Dane, go to danebaptiste.co.uk or follow him on Twitter at DaneBapTweets or Instagram at DaneSnapTeast. Our guest was Danny Price. You can follow Danny on Instagram at Danny fucking Price. The show is produced by me, Howard Cohen. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at The Howard Cohen. The show is mixed and mastered by Audio Culture. You can follow Audio Culture on Instagram at We Are Audio Culture. Please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at DBQE.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
E-podcast. Thanks to Polly, Gelly, and the Acast team for all their support. Thanks for listening, guys, and remember, question everything.